Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, it's all about VR, early adoption, and the Oculus Quest. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKinney. In the last episode, we talked a lot about video cards and the rise and fall of the enthusiast aspect of cards, overclocking, gaming, technology, but we missed one aspect of video cards, and that is controlling VR.
Oh, okay.
And starting with, I'm going to say like the 700 series, VR was kind of emerging, and they said, our video card can support VR, because back then, a lot of the video processing for what went to your eyeballs came from the video card. So you were tied to your PC, basically.
Right.
And nowadays, you could buy... Oh, I know. There was a couple of headsets where you'd buy a phone and you put the phone in front of it, and that was your VR experience. And then you had other ones that had positional sensors all over the room. I'm going to say VR has changed a lot since then.
Well, it really has. And in fact, I'm glad that you mentioned this, because I think we've talked off and on in the podcast, our longtime listeners, I'm sure, are aware of whether or not it was time to do VR.
Well, you keep bringing it up saying, we got to do VR because it's the next generation way of consuming media.
That's right, Dennis.
People will sit in front of their, people will sit in their living rooms on their couch, and instead of staring at a 72-inch television, they will have a 200-inch television right on their eyeballs.
Well, the good news is you can do that today. Well, at least to some extent.
Oh, witchcraft. Witchcraft.
Well, the multi-person, multiplayer experience is still a bit of a work in progress for VR, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Although there are some games that do it. And how do I know this, Dennis? Well, because I succumbed this Christmas and bought a VR headset for the first time.
I want to say you talked about that on a podcast.
I did, but we haven't really, I think, revisited that. I wanted to give some time to have this VR headset, and I bought an Oculus Quest. I bought the entry-level Oculus Quest, if that is the right term. So it's a 64 meg instead of 128 meg version of the headset.
Just like a telephone.
I know.
Not telephone, but mobile phone.
Well, there are reasons for that, and we'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I want to point out that this was a very expensive entry into the market, and I want to point out also that I don't really feel like I'm an early adapter.
Why is that? Because you just bought one.
I know, but the VR market has been around for a while, and as you mentioned, there have been a lot of attempts at it, all the way back to the Virtual Boy for the Game Boy, if you remember that. Oh, little failure.
I'm going to say that the virtual reality went all the way back to the movie Hackers.
Well, yeah.
Because you had the, you remember the, what was his name? Not Splave. He's an overclocker.
Crash and Burn.
No, that was the two. No, we're talking about the villain. His way to unwind would be in a VR immersive sort of gaming pod.
Well, and there's a lot of truth to that, because virtual reality has been a niche, but the folks that are using it have been using it for a lot of more professional things. And augmented reality, of course, is the extreme version of that, where you can overlay virtual reality over your normal world.
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, but if you think about it from a professional line, it's being used a huge amount in high-end technology demos. They're exploring virtual surgery. But unlike a lot of things that are driven in the technology world, unfortunately, by things like porn, for example, virtual reality is being driven by military aspects.
To that point, at CES, I think I had mentioned this during our CES demo, there was a tractor company. Well, it wasn't really a tractor company, but it was a company that was doing augmented reality for tractors, because they had it for military aspects before, but now they are applying the same technology to people running tractors. So if they were on the job site, they would know where the boundaries were, where certain utilities were, how deep they were, and they could actually excavate and plan their construction project out based off of what was showing on the screen, a HUD, so to speak.
So let's step back a little bit, because of course, you know, none of us are going to be able to afford those high-end pro systems anytime soon, and hopefully none of us have to experience VR warfare through the military. But if you do, I'm sure it's amazing. You can definitely comment on that. I want to talk about the barrier of entry. So about a year ago, we started talking about VR a little more seriously, and I had looked at the PlayStation VR and decided that it really wasn't what I was looking for. And at the time, in-home VR, as you mentioned, was really limited to headsets that had to be connected to a PC. So tethered, I think, is the right term for that. Mm-hmm. And you had to have two, three, maybe more sensors mounted in various places in your room.
And the room had to be a certain size.
And the room actually had to be pretty large. So those are huge barriers of entry and expenses, because you have to have a relatively powerful PC mm-hmm. to run VR with, as you mentioned, a video card that was VR ready. You had to have the service. You had to buy the games, and then you had to have a bunch of space, and then all the additional cost of all this additional hardware that didn't always come with your setup.
Right.
So I looked into it about a year ago and just decided that it was getting there with the Vive and the original Oculus devices, but it was not time. It was still novel. But then last year, something happened that got me thinking differently, and that was Oculus released a standalone version of their headset called a Go. The Oculus Go, you can still buy it today for about $200, was really the first untethered USB device.
Yeah, and it was, I want to say that that was based off of the Samsung one where you would just drop the phone into the front of the device.
Very similar, very similar. And, you know, I got a chance to play with one of those and I felt like, well, this is good, but it's not great. Very shortly after that, they announced that they were going to put out the Oculus Quest. And so what the Oculus Quest is an advanced version of the Go uh-huh. that is much more powerful. In fact, at the time, and even still today, it is the best commercially available resolution. And resolution, I think, is what's critical about virtual reality. So let's talk about the Oculus Quest specs for a minute, just to get the technical out of the way.
Yeah, we pulled this up on Google, so anyone can look this uh-huh. up.
So this is an OLED display. Uh-huh. The resolution is 1440 by 1600 per eye, and that's really critical per eye.
Yep.
Whereas previously the Rift, which was their hot one, had a 1080 by 1200 per eye.
Which is an expanded 1080p, basically.
Now, this is the area that people tend to criticize. Its refresh rate is only 72 hertz. Mm-hmm. Well, the average person, as we've quoted at some point in the past, sees at 60 or less. But there are some folks that can detect motion at 70 or better.
The idea of megahertz refresh or hertz refresh, mm-hmm. You know, 30 was like, hey, yeah, if it was 30, you can't see any faster of it. But that was based off of motion pictures. Motion pictures right. run at 29 to 30 frames per second, which is your refresh rate.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the faster refresh you can get, the more smooth the picture will be. So if you have 120 hertz refresh, it may not be discernible by you looking at it, but the feeling of it will be that the motion is a lot more clean.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit of comparison because we want to put a little bit of perspective around those things. So what I've got is a comparison chart here that tells you the difference between those headsets. And we've got, so just to give you an idea, the low-end one that Dennis is talking about, let's use an example. Let's use the Samsung Gear VR, which gives you the ability to stick your fancy phone into it. And it runs. The setup for that bad boy, well, at least retail, is $129.
Yeah, okay. Which is really a frame.
Yeah, now it doesn't do positional tracking. It doesn't have any hand controllers. So it's purely a spectator sport is maybe the right way of mm-hmm. looking at it.
It's video VR.
Yeah, the graphics resolution's limited by your phone divided by two because you've got to split it between your left mm-hmm. and right eyes. Now, the good news is it's wireless.
That's a good point to bring up because... and maybe we could come back to it, but video cards, the whole reason that certain video cards could support VR versus not is because you might have 60 frames per second going to a monitor. You have to divide that by two because of the VR.
And I really think that's why it didn't catch on PCs, because the hardware was still lagging behind. And we'll come back to that because that yep. is kind of important in a minute. So I talked about the Go. Now, to give you an idea, the Go doesn't have to be plugged into anything. It doesn't require a phone. It's about $199. Uh-huh. And I would tell you that if you want to wet your teeth on VR, it's pretty dang good. But it doesn't do positional tracking, no controllers. The realism is about the same as if you put a good phone in it. However, it is wireless and rechargeable. What you're going to miss on that one is really the important stuff. So let's talk about if we have a good gaming PC, what you can do. The tethered version, the high-end one, at least from Oculus, is the Rift, and it's pretty representative of the market. So you're going to need a gaming PC. They're estimating $700 plus on this, and that's not really too bad. If you go back just a couple of podcasts, you'll see what we talk about, the recommended minimum gaming PC build. Mm-hmm. And that same build, Dennis, is what we'd recommend for a good VR setup. And I think that you'll find 700 is a little conservative. I think we figured out that you could do it for 800 if you pinched a few corners.
The optimal price range is about 1500 mm-hmm. regardless.
I agree. So you buy the Rift setup. It's about $400. Mm-hmm. There's also a Rift S, which is a little bit better. That's, I think, $100 more.
Yeah, higher resolution, I believe.
Right. Now you're going to get your headset positional tracking on this one. It does come with two controllers. Now the good news is that, as you already mentioned, the graphics processing is going to be handled by your gaming PC, so your video card. Mm-hmm. And this is where you start looking at cards like our RTX 2060 KO that we talked about in the main edition this month as a good barrier of entry card.
Yeah.
Now you're going to get much better graphics, but you are forced to be tethered.
Yeah, can't move around as much.
And the reason for that is because your post-processing is all happening in your PC. So all your Rift headset has to do is display it at a high resolution rate. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind being tethered 100% of the time, same price as I paid for my Quest, you can get a Rift. Now, I do want to remind you, though, that in addition to being tethered on the Rift, you also have to have two or three sensors. It only comes with two. Mm-hmm. Some people maybe would tell you four, but I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
But well, I know that they recommend three.
Yeah, and the sensor's really just the more sensors you have, the better it can tell where you are in mm-hmm. terms of X, Y, and Z axis.
Now, let's talk back again about the Quest. So if you purchase a Quest like I did, you're getting for $399. Positional tracking, dual controllers. Your graphics realism is a little bit low because you're on that Snapdragon processor. However, since this article's been released, I can tell you that the Quest has released a Quest Link, which allows you to take your Quest, which I might remind you has the highest single eye resolution right now, and you can run the post-processing from your gaming PC. So you can get the best of both worlds, and that cable runs for a branded about $80. And if you get the right generic one for about $30. And you can run all of the games that are designed for the Rift and Rift S post-processed through your Quest. So tethered Quest is the same as a Rift right now for just the price of that cable. So that's what finally convinced me to get the Quest. And ironically, I still haven't decided to buy that cable because I'm still playing around with just the games that I initially bought with it.
Well, and it's kind of nice because it's self-contained. And that's one thing that you kind of glossed over is the fact that the Quest is, it's just a headset.
Very self-contained. So I want to talk about that a little bit. Now, just as kind of a little bit of a spoiler, I brought the unit over for Dennis to experience cold. And we're going to talk about that in just a second and get Dennis's first impressions. But in order to get to that point, I want to kind of walk you guys through what the setup process looks like so you understand how the tethering works. You bring your Quest out and it's rechargeable. The battery life on it is 2 to 3 hours, depending on how graphic intensive your game is, mm-hmm. Which I can tell you, maybe after you've had it for a while, you'll be okay to play for 2 to 3 hours. But I still find that I get a little bit of VR sickness. It's kind of like seasickness. Mm-hmm. If I play in a continuous stretch of 30 to 45 minutes, then I need to take a break.
Yeah. So what you're saying, though, is that the 2 to 3 hours that the Quest will claims it has battery life for
right.
is longer than your average gameplay.
Yes. Now your controllers use AA batteries. There's one in each controller, so you need two. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. There is absolutely no reason that you would not buy a rechargeable battery set and a good one for about $30.
Oh, and it doesn't require, well, okay. So mm-hmm. the nickel metal hydride, the rechargeable batteries, they mm-hmm. have a different voltage than
yes.
alkaline.
And they work just fine.
Perfect.
And so I bought a pretty good set. In fact, probably better than I needed to because, hey, I'm an enthusiast, right?
Oh, of course.
And so I find that the controllers last through about 3 to 4 charges of the headset.
Oh, perfect.
Easy. And I bought two sets, so I just rotate them out. It does come with batteries. They'll get you through your first 2 to 3 hours of playtime if you're lucky. So let's talk about the post cost. So it's going to come with some demos, lots of them, and encourage you to buy the game. So there are some games that give you some gameplay, just like the demos used to back in the day, right? You can unlock the full content if you just pay X amount, right?
Or you download the the hack and be able to unlock all of id games off of their disk.
So there is sort of a version of that that I'm not going to talk about in this particular podcast, except for to tell you that if you have that cable, dun dun dun, you can use software that's called SideQuest to sideload games into it, including some that are not officially supported that are supported for other types of VR headsets.
Oh my gosh.
So if you have a Quest, or maybe you're just curious about how to hack one, Google Oculus Quest SideQuest and get yourself educated. Okay.
Maybe you can play Borderlands 2 on it, right?
I cannot comment on that. But anyway, so let's talk about what you can do. When I bought mine, it came with a handful of games, and because it was the Christmas season, there were a couple of packages, so you could get games on the cheap. But what I want to point out is the total cost of ownership includes purchasing the games. A AAA title, if such a thing exists, costs $39.99.
That's actually reasonable.
And there are only a couple of those games. One of them is Beat Saber, which is considered by many to be the best game available. It's a kind of a lightsaber Dance Dance Revolution game.
Oh, yeah. That one's really popular with the people doing like TikTok kind of videos.
So I can tell you I have the demo. I find it interesting, but not interesting enough to buy. So I may eventually get it, but my feeling is it's first generation. Harmonix is making a game that comes out actually this month. That Harmonix is kind of the king of that sort of stuff. And there are some other games too. Now, what I did choose was a variety of experiences. And I got Dennis into a handful of them today, but I digress because I meant to tell you how setup works. So first things first, you should know that your Oculus Quest works best indoors because it requires cameras to track your movement, and it gets confused by bright lights.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
But otherwise, there's no limitation to your play area.
Go into the garage, turn off the lights, and set up your Oculus Quest.
Absolutely. In fact, it does require some light, but not very much. I've been told that if you buy infrared spectrum lights, you can play it in the dark, and your headset will think that the room is lit, but it's dark, so you can play in total darkness, which is maybe kind of cool if you have young kids or you just need darkness. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to look into that. But anyway, so here's how it works. You put on your headset, you adjust the fit and finish. It is able to track how far apart your eyes are. So if you are small or large in the size of your head, you know what your head size is, right? Then you can make it work. I wear glasses, and it works just fine for me, although it comes with a glasses spacer. If you have glasses that touch the lenses, then you can put a spacer on it and refocus it.
Oh, yeah, so that way your glasses don't fly off and hit the lenses.
Right. But nice. What's important, I think, is to get that thing on your head tight enough that when you're jumping around, you don't fling your $400 headset.
And that kind of is reminiscent of the Wii controller.
It really is. Now, I want to step back a little bit. We talked about the battery life on this thing being 2 to 3 hours. If you have a smart battery, Anker makes one, for example, that has an IQ output, you can plug it into this thing and continuously charge it while you're playing, which extends your battery life really as much as your budget. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that you get a device that has a compatible output. I find the smart IQ works.
So you got to have the Anker in your pocket?
Yes.
Anchored in your pocket to charge your headset.
Something like that. Now, the front of the headset's a little top-heavy, as you can imagine, if you just look at the picture of it.
Actually,
so
it wasn't.
A lot of folks, well, it's because, you know, we're big boys, right? But for a kid, are using Velcro to attach a battery pack to the back to help balance the headset on the head. And then you just go out to Monoprice or wherever, you buy yourself an 8 or 9 inch USB cable, and you're set for a long period of time. But then again, as we already mentioned, if you can play that long, then more power to you.
Yep.
So setup, you turn it on. You have the ability to look at the room. You can still see your outside environment when you put the headset on. And you draw what they call a guardian space on the floor. It's just drawing an outline of the safe space that you're going to be in.
And this is in lieu of having the external sensors that would actually draw that room
yes.
for you.
So the headset memorizes where you're at, and it will actually remember the room if it recognizes it. And remember that you have a guardian there. And there's a certain amount of those that will store. I don't remember how many because I haven't used them up yet. Cool. Long story short, you draw your safe space. Now, if you want to see what happens when you do not draw a good safe space, all you got to do is Google VR fails on YouTube and have some fun.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of etiquette to how you interact with somebody that has it on there that you will discover very quickly. Do not touch the person in VR. Do not stand anywhere where you might get smacked. And do not put them close to anything that's expensive.
I find that the smacking is probably more important than the touching. However, inappropriate touching is rarely, never really allowed.
Again, all you got to do is Google VR fails and watch somebody playing a boxing game, and I think you know where that will go. I'm sorry for those folks' TVs and their noses and anything that was important to them. So once you've got that set up, you get a nice virtual world that's kind of neat. There's of course, a demo that teaches people how to interact. That's called First Steps that most people experience, but we skipped that for Dennis. Demo for you.
No demo.
And we dove right into a selection of games that I thought would give him an experience. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to do now is talk to Dennis about his first VR experiences and get an impression from a non-VR owner.
Okay, by non-VR owner, I do not own a headset. That's well known. But I have used a VR headset for, I don't know, maybe on 3 or 4 separate occasions over the past 5 years.
So let me ask you, as kind of a baseline for this, mm-hmm. why don't you own a VR headset?
Partially because I have this, how should I put this? I have this desire to always have the best.
All right.
And when I keep looking at the VR headset specs, I see 700 pixels resolution. It's like, no, that's not good. 1440 resolution, that's getting better. But I want to have good graphics, you know, so it's kind of the wait until next month.
Ah, yes.
A better one will be out.
And to be fair, there are already rumors there'll be a newer version of the Quest, which can't help but be better.
Oh, of course.
Coming up. Before we go any further, I think it's important to point out, we talked about that processor the Quest uses, right? The Snapdragon 835, I want to say.
I think that is correct.
So the Snapdragon 835 mobile platform, or MSM 8998, is an Android-based Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. Uh-huh. Dennis, I know you can see it, but when was this processor released?
That would be in 2017, sir.
So, I'm sorry, what year is it now?
As of this recording, it's 2020.
And the Quest headset's been out less than a year, so that means that 2 years behind is where we're at currently with the technology in that for a phone.
To put this in perspective, this is the Mars rover.
More or less. Yeah. But I want to also compare it to video cards like we did in the main. So mm-hmm. right now we're at the 2020 tie or yeah, maybe 2080 or super maybe, depending on, you know, your point of view.
And budget.
So what's a two-year-old card cutting edge?
Cutting edge, we are talking the 900 series.
Yep.
Oh, wait, no, it's the 10 series.
10 series, so 1080, not even probably a 1080 Ti, just to give you an idea of how much video cards have processed during that time.
Yeah.
So if we now say that for 2020/2021, 2 years behind, we're really looking at probably 1080 level graphics.
Yeah.
So the next generation of VR headset, when they release the next version of the Quest, which is the wireless version, it's probably going to be a dramatic increase.
Now, to also put this in perspective, the mobile hardware space does not advance at the same speed as a desktop GPU or desktop CPU.
Right.
Because of the form factor. We still have this mobile form factor. We have a battery we're carrying around. People don't want to have 2 hour battery life on their smartphone. They need to have at least 8 to 12 to 14 hours of usage out of it. So we can't have this really super powerful overclocked APU inside our smartphone. So they have to draw the line between how much power that delivers versus how much power it consumes.
And that's very true when you're talking about something you have to carry around on your head.
Yes. While this 835 mobile processor was released in 2017, it probably has very comparable speed to a phone at that time, which I probably have one in my pocket right now. The additions to that are going to be very incremental But I think the technology that is supported by those is really the more important part.
And this is why we talked about tethered power versus untethered power, yes, and why the Quest is kind of the best of both worlds right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about games. Now, I started, Dennis, maybe a little unfairly in what I think is my most graphically impressive video game, and it's called Red Matter.
I liked it.
So give me your first impressions. Tell the folks kind of what was going on there, because you didn't get a chance to experience any of these games in any great length.
No. Previously, it was like the VR demo experience was, I was in a jungle and there was a T-Rex coming over to bite my head. It was kind of fun, but NVIDIA was just doing a demo where they would change the vignetting, or basically the image around the edges, so it looked more flat instead of curved, like it comes across in a lens.
Oh, okay. I can see why that's important to VR.
In terms of Red Matter, I was looking around and I didn't see any of that vignetting happening. It looked like I was actually in the room, which was really impressive. And of course, that is really the basis of VR to begin with, right?
Right.
And I don't know, I was really impressed. In terms of the graphics, you could tell that it was a bit limited because of, you know, texture quality and detail.
Right. Now, what we're talking about is really graphics versus photorealism.
Exactly. And it kind of looked like I was in a video game, which is really what it is what it's supposed to be.
So just as a quick highlight, Red Matter is a puzzle game where you're on Mars, as you might have guessed from the title, and you're exploring a star base. It's a bit of a puzzle game. Mm-hmm. And so I jumped Dennis in on my save where I was trying to figure out a puzzle and just let him kind of experience that game and the level without even trying to solve the puzzle, just kind of the environment in general.
Yeah, just interacting with the buttons and the levers and moving around the room to read some posters and stuff like that. Obviously, since I hadn't played the game before, the controls were a little bit of a learning curve. You had to figure out what button to press and how long to press it and where to move it. But it reminded me a lot of a game that I played before, which was Bring Us the Moon, which again was also a bit of a puzzle game, but it was also a puzzle game on rails. Whereas this game, Red Matter, was a lot like Myst in terms of there's not a lot of help and you really have to be perceptive about what it is that you're looking at. And again, I think that that is really the essence of what a VR game should be. Because that way you can inspect your environment and you can see different aspects of it as you're playing that you wouldn't normally be able to see in a regular PC game.
Yeah, now Red Matter controls the environment by making you basically move room for room, so you never have a huge amount of area available, which mm-hmm. makes up for the processing limitations. And the puzzle solving is very much like that. You go back to your previous rooms, you go to your next room, sometimes you need to go fetch in items. You have to remember clues, scanning posters, will translate them, which might give you hints. But it's very much, I would say, kind of almost an escape room after escape room.
Yeah. And I want to say the biggest limitation of it was the movement. So in VR, for instance, you aren't actually at a Mars installation. And as we talked earlier, there is a net, you know, a boundary of where you can move
right.
within the space.
The Guardian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Guardian. I can't move around a control panel. I have to use the controls to move my character around the control panel.
Oh, yeah. And that does some interesting things to your stomach when you're first getting used to it.
Yes, of course. But that reminds me of like Myst and Riven, those games where you had to actually click, say, I want to move here. And then it would actually move you around to get into that position so you could start looking around.
I think that's a very fair explanation of how that works. And really, I think we've all seen videos of these folks on weird treadmills and stuff, and maybe that's the future of VR, but I just don't see having one of those in my living room anytime soon.
No, definitely not.
Okay, so the next game that we tried, I wanted to give you something different where you didn't have control of the movement, so that allows for a lot more speed, and I put you in Epic Roller Coasters, which is a roller coaster simulator. Mm-hmm. Now, this game has various types of roller coasters, starting with bare basic graphics to sort of fantasy stuff to photorealistic graphics. Yeah. I'm not going to lie, this is one where you can get the first bite for free and then you pay per track. So I put Dennis in a middle one that had some dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs.
And what I wanted to do with this one is give him the experience of where things are moving and they're outside of your control, like you're riding a vehicle or that type of thing, or in this case, a roller coaster.
Right. And I want to say another TX tried to bite my head off.
Who
which
knew?
Which was kind of fun. But Darren coached me, saying, well, this is the one I play where I'm sitting down. And after maybe the first couple of bumps on there, and it wasn't that I got a vertigo effect, but when the cart visually looked like it was going down and I felt like I was going to fall, I found myself catching myself, even though I wasn't moving. So my brain was thoroughly tricked.
So we know VR can actually work in that sense.
Yeah. And that was the point where I said, pause. I need a chair, so I'm going to sit down. And this is the best part about it, because it knew that when I started the roller coaster, I was at a certain height. And when I sat down, I was at a different height. So inside the roller cart, I couldn't really see unless I propped my head up.
Ah, so you could see out of the roller coaster car, I guess?
Yeah, but it was kind of fun because, you know, it was on rails. As you mentioned, I had no control over it. But there was a couple points where I was actually jumping. And had I stood up to where I was, I could look over the side and I'd be able to see where I was landing and stuff like that. It's a really cool experience. However, having been on a roller coaster before, there are external forces that actually help enhance the experience of actually being on one versus watching myself be on one.
That's a good point, because you've got the wind in your hair, you've got environmental, plus the sense of motion can be pretty well simulated, but it's not the same as the rocking and shaking and bouncing.
Yes. The one thing about the roller coaster, in VR at least, that probably would enhance it would be some sound effects. And the sounds were a bit muted. Maybe that was the volume thing on your Quest, but it was more of a, to really get you into the environment, you should really hear, you know, the wheels on the roller coaster. You should be able to hear the dinosaurs chirping at you and the ones that show up behind you and try to bite you, stuff like that.
Oh, and this is a good point to point out one specific thing about VR that we haven't talked about, and that's the sound. Mm-hmm. When you purchase the Quest specifically, it has speakers built into it, so you can wear the headset, and it is playing to your ears from the actual headset, but it also has the ability to plug in a set of headphones, any actual headphones.
Yeah, that's cool.
So as good as you want. But the bare minimum experience is to purchase two mono in-ear headphones, which I didn't bring over because no one likes to share their in-ear headphones.
No. It's just like basically earbuds, uh-huh. Right?
But that would have helped with that experience. Now, to finish that, I wanted to play a game that I actually really like that is a really common demo, and it's a game called Superhot. So what it does is it is a you against the shapeless bad guys, and shapeless is not the right description, just kind of like generic faceless bad guys. Mm-hmm. And they may have guns or they may not. And you have to use what's provided to you to defeat these guys in the room before you can continue. So you might have ninja stars, you might have a pistol, and they move at you. And the gimmick for Superhot that makes it so interesting to me is when you move, the game moves. When you pause by not moving, the game freezes, which gives you the ability to manipulate time. And when you move fast, the game moves fast. Mm-hmm. And when you move slow, the game moves slow. So you can dodge bullets, Matrix style. You can do kung fu, all these things that you can't do in real life because you just do them in slow motion.
Yes, I found myself doing a couple of Matrix bullet moves to actually watch the bullet whiz by my head, which there was a sound effects for that, which I thought was pretty awesome, and then come around and with the other hand punch the guy. And I'm like, that's pretty darn cool. I wouldn't have been able to do that had this been a full speed game. But it gives you a chance to address the enemy that you is attacking you, plus look around to see who else might be coming at you.
Now, this is kind of a limited movement game. You can move around in it, but it's not required. But you can also duck behind things, look around things. So it does have that true VR in it. Yeah. And I think maybe the thing I like most about it is it tries to do something original, and it doesn't care that its graphics are simple.
No, it brings back the mental immersion of classical video games. Like, I guess a good example would be NetHack.
Oh, yeah.
I think we've all played that one. Maybe some of the people listening have not. But NetHack was a game. It was a roguelike game where you are in a dungeon. You're an at symbol. And as you're moving through the dungeon, you might run into a K symbol or a K letter, which is a monster. That monster might have certain attributes and it might kill you and it might not. So you had to think about translating the K into the monster you're fighting and remember how that monster moves and stuff like that. Well, this game is a lot like that. You don't have the background to deal with. You don't have to have a light coming in through a window to actually obscure your view. You have these three red guys coming at you, and how are you going to take care of them?
Oh, yeah. Well, I found that there were some fun things that I learned along the way, like you could hit their hand with a bottle and it would fling the gun up and you could catch it out of the air and then use it.
Oh, I should have done that.
Things like that. So anyway, three different experiences, and there are lots of other ways that VR can be used. Virtual tourism, so you can go places you couldn't go in real life. Mm-hmm. Moss is a really terrific game where you're, you know, helping a small creature explore, for example, just to give you an idea of some of the other experiences that are out there. But to wind this up, Dennis, we already talked about the barrier of entry is about $400, mm-hmm. plus the games run usually from $12 to $40. So cheaper on the games, definitely cheaper than a gaming PC. Mm-hmm. The mass market on this, they sold many, many of these in fourth quarter.
I want to say there was close to like 700,000 of them over Christmas. Mm-hmm.
So we all kind of wondered if it was going to catch on. So here are the official numbers from Nielsen. Dun, dun, dun. The Oculus Quest was the most popular Oculus headset. It sold 705,000 units in 2019, yeah. outselling all of the other Oculus combined. In Q4 alone, the Christmas sales on the Oculus Quest, there were 317,000 units, which puts it only slightly behind the most popular VR headset. This might surprise you, but maybe not. The PlayStation VR headset, which sold 338,000.
Yeah, well, with PlayStation actually having that device that has VR content on it, it really makes it an obvious, we want to buy this.
And I think it was really helped by the fact that every month there's a free game and frequently a free VR game. So you get a library, one of the advantages of PlayStation. I do want to point out that Super Data predicts that extended VR will reach a revenue of $14.9 billion by 2023. So this is why I say I don't know that I'm an early adapter anymore. I think I'm coming in with that initial push.
Yeah, you're with the mainstream. It's still early in terms of the content that's available. There isn't a lot of titles that are VR specific. I mean, there is games that have been converted to VR, like Borderlands mm-hmm. 2, but Super Hot, for instance, there's not a lot of graphics there, but mm-hmm. it's all about the immersion aspect of it.
Well, if you're looking for a killer app that might convince you, I should tell you, maybe you do know, that Half-Life Alyx for VR has been announced. It will be Quest compatible, and it will run with or without the cable is what they're telling me. And it could be the killer app. So I have to ask you, would you consider buying a Quest, or do you still think it's too soon?
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.